the B-Fox and B-Frank show. Lots to talk about this week, as I feel like I say at the start of every show, but let's start with the big news in the world of college football. UCF just lost their AD and head coach to Tennessee, but some could argue ended up in a better position after that. It is Gus Malzahn coming to be the new head coach of the Golden Knights, of course. Let go from Auburn this past offseason. I know you have been critical, let's say, of Bo Nix and Auburn at times over, I mean, the lifetime of the show, certainly as long as Gus Malzahn has been there. What do you make of this move for him and for UCF?
I mean, if you're UCF, it couldn't have worked any better. You arguably get the better of the two coaches, and it another offensive minded guy, which will be interesting. But I think the biggest thing that Gus can bring, and that we saw at Auburn, is he continuously recruited and restocked the talent pool at a very high level. Obviously, it's going to take a little bit of a dip at UCF, but you got to wonder what a guy with all those resources can do. You know, you saw at the top in the SEC what he could do. Now you go to UCF and you've got a real chance to just build an absolute power, and you've definitely got more time and less expectation, I guess I would say, although some reporters might not agree with that based on some of the questions he received, but I like the hire. I think that UCF probably ended up in as good a spot, if not a better position, than they were previously, like you had mentioned before. I was curious as to why Tennessee wouldn't at least kick the tires on Gus Malzahn, because Tennessee would kill to be Auburn right now. Like, they would absolutely kill to be in Auburn's position. And one of the things I think that he's done best is attract quarterback talent. You can argue, like I have, about what he's done with it, but at the same time, he has brought in consistently some solid quarterbacks.
Yeah, it's interesting how this all played out, because yeah, you could definitely see a world in which Tennessee would have rather had Malzahn. Could have been a tougher sell, because again, as we talked about, walking into the Tennessee job as it currently is, with potential sanctions looming, not the most appealing thing in the world. Like, even with all of the kind of firepower behind that program, prestige, history, whatever you want to call it, playing in the SEC, Gus Malzahn might need a little bit of a break from that. But yeah, I mean, this is continuing an interesting trend we've seen over, you know, the last better part of a decade, I'd say. It seems like there are so many coaches that get let go by high profile jobs that just find their way to Florida. So yep. Charlie Strong, Lane Kiffin, Willie Taggart, in a way, and now Gus Malzahn. But UCF is not like the biggest step down in the world. I understand coming from Auburn to UCF, it is a step down, but it's not like he's going to the Fun Belt or any other conference that we want to pick on here. Like, UCF has been a major player the last couple of years. They beat Gus Malzahn to end the season in the Peach Bowl 1 year, something that I'm sure he'll be reminded of frequently, but
they've got a national title.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, Gus Malzahn's got one as well, as the year he won the Broyles Award as the top assistant in the country. Always interesting too, you know, despite being an offensive minded coach, always had a loaded defense. And that kind of goes back to what you're saying too. Like, he kept the cupboard stocked, especially while on the defensive side of the ball. There were a lot of questions offensively at times, you know, some shaky quarterback play, cycling in a lot of different offensive coordinators. So it was kind of a little more difficult to get any sort of rhythm on that side of the ball. But I think at a slightly lower level at UCF, the Knights should be able to, you know, be just as effective offensively as they were under Heupel, maybe playing at a slightly slower pace. But I don't think that Malzahn will have much trouble kind of keeping the Knights as an offensive juggernaut, shall we say.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is it's kind of like I guess you could say at Auburn, where next man up, basically, when they lose their talent to the NFL under Malzahn. Now it's next man up, like the coaching position at UCF. They land who I think is a very capable and quality SEC head coach now at their level, which is a huge win. And now we get to see what Gus can do with, again, less pressure, less spotlight, and one of the biggest public schools in the entire country with seemingly a growing budget and appetite for winning and winning at a high level.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I think also gets overlooked a little bit when we're talking about these schools, is especially in college football sense, is like small schools. UCF is fucking massive.
It's huge.
that cannot be stressed enough. And if the powers that be are interested in providing interesting storylines for all of us, then UCF and Tennessee should set up some sort of home and home or two for one while both coaches are still there.
Fine by me.
That's the key part. None of this 17 years in the future bullshit, but
that's 58,392 is, according to the Google, how many student undergrads are at UCF.
Yeah. I went to a Big Ten school, and that's more than we're there. And that's kind of the reputation that the Big Ten has. But yeah, I mean, it's not a small fry operation there. I do find it funny that he was asked at his introductory press conference, as you alluded to, how he's going to be able to handle the pressure from the UCF fan base, like completely straight faced, asking a guy who just came from the toughest division in college football. Just the lack of self-awareness is mind-boggling there.
With obviously the in-state rival of Alabama, who's been so dominant of late with, you know, probably the greatest college football coach ever currently at the helm. And it's like, how do you think you're going to handle the pressure down here with the rabid fans at UCF? It's like probably the same way I handled the Auburn fans.
Going from the Iron Bowl to the civil conflict, which UCF never even cared about in the first place, is just chef's kiss.
It is perfect. Gotta get Bob Diaco back at UConn, though.
Bob Diaco is just such a tragic figure in college football. After like the national championship almost season at Notre Dame, he has just failed so loudly at pretty much everywhere.
Where even recently, is he now?
Well, he is,
because he was at La Tech as the D coordinator.
Yeah, so this most recent year he was at Purdue.
That's right.
He is not returning there, so I think he's currently a free agent.
Somebody call him up.
I mean, UConn head coaching position obviously did not go well. Nebraska was just a hilariously failed experiment as a D coordinator. And then, he's been bouncing around. He's been bouncing around. But, yeah, I mean, get him back in the mix. Get him some kind of Butch Jones-esque position at UConn. And let's fire the civil conflict back up.
Love to see that. Definitely need something like that back in our lives.
Something to bring us hope in these trying times is like everywhere except the state of Florida is negative 30 degrees.
Right.
All right. So before we get to college basketball winners and losers, the big story of the week, not involving Jim Christian, who we'll talk about later.
Yes.
Jalen Johnson of Duke, not to be confused with the many other Jalen Johnsons out there, is opting out of the rest of the season, which if you look at Duke's resume and how the season has gone, probably not going to be much longer, but it is what it is. It's his decisions preparing for the NBA draft, where he will make millions of dollars, and he's not going to do that in college, we think. So a lot of people, everything above board at Duke. They're just able to get all of those top recruits every year just through
Brotherhood.
Promise of an education. A lot of people getting mad online. Once again, the bane of my existence, John Rothstein, who is just going full heel at this point, is getting very mad in playing the semantics game. It's not opting out, it's quitting. Like, it is okay to see something happen and not think to yourself, like, oh, I have to fire off a take about this. Like, all this is happening is a guy is making a responsible decision, what's best for him, for his future. From, you know, the optics, admittedly, not the best. And you can see how people would be critical, you know, would he do this if Duke was, you know, undefeated or a lock to make the NCAA tournament? But that doesn't matter. Just as we're not shaming anyone who opted out at any point of the college football season, we're not shaming Jalen Johnson for making the decision that he felt was best for him either.
Yeah, I think the best example right now is this is like a guy opting out of like a bowl game. It simply does not matter at this point.
Yeah.
It's all academic. Like, you're playing because you have the games on your schedule. But this is a guy whose earning potential will never be higher, presumably, at this point, or as far as he's aware, it won't be higher than it is now. He needs to protect his most valuable asset, himself, as much as possible. How does it help him playing meaningless games at Duke? Yeah, you can say if they were good, he'd still be playing. You don't know that, though.
Yeah, and I mean, the bowl game comparison is a really good one, and I like that a lot because, like, at this point, there's not really anything else he can do to elevate his draft stock that much that he can't do at, you know, the combine or individual workouts with teams. Like, unless he came out the last couple of weeks and just turned into a lethal perimeter shooter, which, not going to hold my breath, there's not really anything in it for him at this point anyway. It is all academic. They're like, Duke's not a tournament team. Like, yeah. if the name on the front of their jerseys didn't say Duke, they wouldn't even be like remotely almost touching the discussion as people are trying to keep them so desperately in kind of not the bubble, but bubble adjacent, just close enough where, hey, if they string some together in what is not a good ACC, who knows? But yeah, I mean, Duke season is over. You can understand why Coach K preseason was trying to get every team into the NCAA tournament field. Like, it's okay to just not open your mouth and try to tweet at unpaid college athletes. Same mindset as don't tweet at recruits.
Yeah, I mean, he was going to Duke for a year anyways, right?
Yeah.
What does it matter? It is simply a pit stop on his way to where he needs to get. And anyone who thinks of it any other way is an idiot, plain and simple. Like, you are dumb if you think that he was planning on staying or doing anything other than 1 year at Duke. Why should he be beholden to a university that basically owns him already and play games that can only... Sure, he could help his draft stock by continuing to play, but at the same time, there's nothing in it. And at some point, you've got to look out for yourself. And I think that's what he's doing. And this is basically the only way that these athletes and players can do anything for themselves these days is by choosing whether or not they're actually going to play, because they still can't make money for whatever reason. They still can't take advantage of the money-making years that they have here, because you can bet he'd probably make a decent amount of money if he was able to sell t-shirts or sell his autograph or God knows what. But that is not the way the NCAA works, as we all know. And I don't know. It bothers me that people think he owes Duke this, like, playing out the full year. It can sit wrong with people, and that's totally fine, because I just know some folks we'll never see it any other way and whatever. But if you're on the fence, like, it's as simple as a person doesn't want to risk anything because they know they have a bigger life-changing moment coming up. And if you can't see that and you open your eyes, you're clueless. So I have no problem with it. I actually think it's a smart move. I encourage it for certain players. doesn't diminish anything about college basketball. This was a weird season to begin with. Like, this is in my head, if you take away everything and make it a vague headline, it is unpaid athlete chooses to sit out rest of meaningless season during global pandemic. That's what this is. Where is the harm in that?
I mean, it's just anything that can be construed as player empowerment or players making decisions in their own self-interest to protect their future. Yeah. Yeah. Which someone threw back, like, let's keep this energy next time a coach leaves, right, as recruiting season's starting to heat up.
Right.
Which he will not. But, yeah, I mean, if your first reaction, you see that news, your first reaction is to get mad, you are the worst. You are just one of the scales of society.
Absolutely. And the brotherhood thing is a whole nother conversation, but it's just like, really throwing that out there as something, as a reason he should stay. Like, he played for Duke. Like, what does it matter at this point? Most of you only played there for a year, which is the oxymoron of it all. You know, Duke is the brotherhood, but it's been the one and done city, them in Kentucky, for, I don't know, a decade now. And it makes no sense. So good for him. Glad he made a decision for himself to benefit himself, and hopefully things go well.
Yeah, I mean, in the words of the esteemed philosopher Cardell Jones, we ain't come here to play school.
Damn right.
This is a guy who's going to be a one and done regardless. And I mean, if the NBA didn't have their age restriction rule, he might have been in the NBA already. So
exactly.
That's just some food for thought there. Anyway, I was feeling a little positive this week. I had a lot more winners than losers. I don't know about you. Trying to make up a little bit for last week.
Last week was easy, though.
Last week was fun. I did. Again, there are times, as you know, I have hate in my heart and I need to let it out. This may not be that week. I may have gotten it out already at the last segment, but I'll start with you. Your big winner last week was...
I'm going to go Creighton. Obviously, I sway towards the Big East, but this was a team that really – they struggle against top competition, and struggling isn't maybe not the best word, but they just missed opportunities, I think is the best way to put it. They have had chances against some top teams, or at the time, top teams like Kansas, and they just haven't been able – to capitalize. They finally got the opportunity. They bounced back from a bad Georgetown loss, squeaked past Marquette, and then beat Georgetown playing great defense, and then blow out Villanova, which is as good a win as you can get in the Big East. And now they sit in a position where they can potentially tie or win the Big East at this point. They've kept themselves alive here, 12-4 in the league with just four games to go, One of those is at Villanova. So they can complete a season sweep over Villanova, really move themselves up the seed lines. They've still got a chance to be a 2 or a 3 seed at this point.
Yeah, this was one they had to have. And winning as emphatically as they did was just as important, I think. So we've talked about Creighton a lot. They've been in our losers section a lot. And a big part of that is, you know, on paper, this is a team that could clearly be a 2 or a 3 seed. I think talent-wise, one of the 10 best teams in the country, but they haven't really played like that this year. And it's been a little bit of a down year for, I think, the rest of the Big East outside of Creighton and Villanova, and Creighton losing some games they shouldn't to the likes of Georgetown. And Villanova is the best possible win they can get the rest of the season. So to beat them by 16 and to have the opportunity to do it again, that could vault them up, provided they take care of business the rest of the way where they should. But yeah, this was kind of the Creighton we expected to see a little bit more of in the preseason. It's absolutely one they needed to have.
For sure. And like you said, they are a highly talented team. I mean, there were talks top 5 preseason if Tyshawn Alexander stays, right? And obviously he goes pro and they drop to the teens, but still, I mean, they are so good, and when they're on, they can beat just about anyone not named Gonzaga, I think, in the entire country.
Okay. That's a take quick.
Yeah.
I don't hate it. I mean, I think my hot take about Creighton is that I think they have better individual pieces, not just Marcus Zagorowski, than Villanova, but Villanova is just such a cohesive unit at this point under Jay Wright. They're still going to have the upper hand, but yeah, I mean,
I would agree with that. I think, and they play a similar style as well, but I think Villanova is kind of having to adjust because Jeremiah Robinson Earl is such a big part of their team now, and they're not used to having a dominant big man like that, or at least not of late. But I would say, I mean, basically across the board, I would take anyone on Creighton over anyone on Villanova. Like, maybe there's an argument with Justin Moore. But yeah, obviously Jeremiah Robinson Earl gets the edge over anyone on Creighton. But yeah, I mean, they guard for guard, they can match up pretty well with Villanova.
I guess now that I'm sounding it out, it's not too crazy because head to head, Creighton was the better team once.
True.
They'll have to do it again. But yeah, over the course of the season, Villanova has been one of the best teams in the entire country. Creighton has not, but this is definitely a step in the right direction. One of the teams that has been one of the best throughout the season, and we weren't necessarily sure what would happen after a long layoff, Michigan, back in a big way.
Yep.
Come from behind win over Wisconsin. I mean, that's about as good a win as you can get, kind of in your first game back after that long of a layoff, beating a ranked Wisconsin team that, yeah, they have a lot of losses, but mostly in Big Ten play, in what has been an extremely competitive conference, and they got a big win on the road. So not really skipping a beat, which was really our main concern. We saw what happened when Villanova went on pause. They came back pretty much the same team. Other teams have struggled. Small sample size, obviously, but so far so good coming back for Michigan.
Yeah, I think one of the big questions I have is how good is Wisconsin? I think they're talented, but they are a team that we have seen struggle with good teams in the Big Ten. They've lost to Michigan, Ohio State, Illinois, or they've lost twice to Michigan, Ohio State and Illinois. But they've also lost to Penn State, Maryland, and Marquette. And as we've seen, none of those three, Maryland maybe, but none of those teams are really tournament squads. Is this a team that needs to be on every night, like needs to be on to win, or are they someone that is just like maybe they're getting too in their own way with all the expectations and everything like that?
I mean, I think you could really argue semantics, because personally, I think Wisconsin is not one of the more talented teams in the Big Ten. I think their strength is their experience. They have
definitely
a lot of old guys, and if everybody comes back, there aren't really NBA prospects, they will be an old team next year. I mean, there's no star power in this team. That they won the league last year, tied for a share of it, and they didn't get anyone on the first or second team All Big Ten. Probably shouldn't this year either. But
yeah.
They are incredibly efficient most nights defensively, and offensively as well. They slow it down because they usually do have a talent disparity against a lot of the top teams in the Big Ten. But for the most part, Greg Gard has Wisconsin playing at a similar level as they were under Bo Ryan, or doing more with less. The problem with Wisconsin under Greg Gard is he is not recruiting at the level that Bo Ryan was, especially later in his tenure. I mean, honestly, like there was a time, I mean, even last year when it looked like the bottom was falling out for Wisconsin basketball, the way they started the year, because there was a couple of recruiting classes that more resembled the MAC than Big Ten, what you should be bringing into the Big Ten. But Wisconsin's definitely a team this year, as always, where, you know, the whole is greater than the sum of the individual parts. And they can beat any team in the Big Ten on any given night. sometimes a lot has to go their way for that to happen. They really should have won this game against Michigan, which would have been quite the feather in their cap. And you could look the other way on the fact that Michigan was coming off such a long layoff, but unable to close it out. I don't think anybody's going to look at a potential matchup with Wisconsin in the NCAA tournament and be filled with fear. This is never going to be that team, but it's a team that can still frustrate you and fundamentally you to death. And Brad Davison will try to take 1 million charges.
As always.
Yeah.
I think you hit on a really good point, though, is Greg Gard just does not recruit to the same level. And I think the perfect comparison is look at their in-state rival Marquette. Who has been the better team over the last 5 years? It's been Wisconsin. And any metric you look at, it's been Wisconsin. Now look at the huge, huge difference in recruiting level between Marquette and Wisconsin. And Marquette is blowing them out of the water in terms of getting recruits. I can't say keeping, but getting recruits, at least in the door. And it is very Bo Ryan, where you're doing more with less. But he also figured out how to bring in more when they needed it. And that was a big reason why they could make the run to the national championship and the, you know, consistent NCAA tournament second weekend teams that they were.
Yeah, you need a Sam Decker type guy
right,
to come in and be a star right away. And like even Frank Kaminsky, he wasn't, you know, this all-world recruit. He took a couple years coming off the bench before he became National Player of the Year caliber player. And there is no shame in finding 2- and 3-star guys who you can develop into these diamonds in the rough. That's how Wisconsin has normally been built. And it's not necessarily
it's more credit than picking a guy that everyone says is good, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if anything, that's more an indictment of your boy Wojo and his coaching ability. But, you know, Marquette is getting better players into the program, but Wisconsin is still making better runs into the tournament or, you know, making the tournament at all.
Right.
But, yeah, there's a couple good ricochet shots at Marquette in there. Just
got to keep them honest.
Make you feel good. Yeah.
Got to keep them honest.
Yeah. Don't want them getting too high.
Little bob and weave.
Glad we recorded a day later this week so I can include Florida State.
Yeah.
Huge was that win. Fun?
That is, it feels almost like a Tom Izzo Michigan State team. They're starting to round into form right as they need to, right when the ante's getting raised and things are getting bigger and more important. I mean, that was the biggest game left on their schedule, I'd say, by a significant margin. And it leaves the door open now for at least a shot at a share of the ACC title game. I mean, they've got 3 games in hand that they still need to make up. But the rest of their schedule outside of Virginia Tech, who, again, I'm going to say this for the millionth time, I'm still not convinced is a good basketball team. They've got Miami, North Carolina, BC, and Notre Dame. I mean, that should be 4 easy wins for them right there, and then take care of business against Va Tech, and you're, you know, 12-2 right there with Virginia at the top of the ACC.
Virginia Tech to you is just the Scott Drew meme. We're not sure if they're good or not.
But I am genuinely not convinced. Like, I'm telling
you.
I'm 100% certain that I will pick against Virginia Tech in the first round. And this isn't like, this isn't a shtick. This isn't anything. I just truly don't believe that like they're going to be a 5 seed or maybe. And that's going to be the perfect level for me to be like, Toledo's perfect to beat them. You know, I love what the Rockets are doing.
Yeah, match up against Belmont or somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I like this is completely earnest, but yes. It is the Scott Drew meme come to life.
It's the Scott Drew meme in the early years, not the late years.
Sure. Well, I'll grant you that. But yeah, I mean, that was so satisfying.
Yes.
It was especially because Virginia kind of crept back into it, made it a single-digit game, and then you look up and Florida State's in the midst of a 17-0 run. It is unreal how uncomfortable they can make you very quickly. Even a team that, you know, we kind of just talked about it with Wisconsin. Virginia is that fundamentally sound of a team, and then some. They kind of reinvented how basketball has been played in the 21st century by bringing it back, ironically, to a more old school approach. Defense first, slow it down. None of this kind of high flying stuff that you get when you can get superior athletes, which
right.
Virginia typically does not have. Florida State does have superior athletes at every position, and when you get Raekwon Gray and Scotty Barnes going, it's tough for anybody to stop. And it's weird for sure that there is a lack of marquee games or opportunities for big time wins in ACC play this year, which put all that much more emphasis on this matchup against Virginia. They absolutely answered the bell, completely rinsed them, and it was fun for the folks at home.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked at length about Florida State's length and athleticism, ironically enough, and just how smothering they can be on the defensive end. And then when they get out in transition, I mean, they're dunking from the free throw line because the guys are just that good, that strong, that athletic. But when they shoot the three, it is basically impossible to stop this team because they can beat you off the dribble so easily and then get easy layups at the rim or get easy dump offs because everybody on their team is 6'7" at least. And now they've got a 6'9" point guard, and it's just absolutely insane what they're able to do. So when Florida State can hit the three, they are one of the most difficult teams in the entire country to beat. We got to see that against Virginia, who, as we've said, is one of the most sound teams defensively, and they dropped 81.
Yeah, and that Florida State, as we've talked about, they are, I think they're going to end up being a four seed that whichever one gets them in their region is going to be pissed because yeah. That is the last team you want to see in the Sweet 16. Of course, they could always play their way higher, but that's going to be very difficult with the ACC this year. It's like this was the win that would really make some noise. Duke, Carolina, not really going to move the needle. Any of the traditional powers. Virginia Tech, you could argue, could. It just all depends on if the committee holds them in much higher regard than you do. Because really, if you look at their schedule, that's all they have left the regular season. Conference tournaments are in flux, but I mean, Miami, Boston College, Notre Dame, maybe UNC is a quality opponent you can consider, especially on the road, but this was it. And they took full advantage.
Yeah. And this is actually where it might benefit some of these big, like the cluster at the top of the Big Ten, where you've got Michigan, Ohio State, and Illinois. And, you know, if you can't have all these teams as one, like if someone gets bumped to the two line, they might get to avoid Florida State because of that now. So that would be something for them.
Potentially. My fear for the Big Ten, as I mean, is tradition at this point, is they're just going to beat the crap out of each other for the next month and then just have no one make the Final Four.
Yep.
So
it's possible.
Looking forward to it. I don't know. It's Michigan has one loss. Ohio State's playing as well as anyone not named Baylor or Gonzaga, but I just do not see a national title contender there, really.
Illinois is the one that if I had to pick of any of them that could win the national championship, it's Illinois, and I feel very not confident about that after the Nebraska game.
Yeah, it sucks. As that Nebraska game was a roller coaster.
I can imagine.
From those of us who are watching with Illinois fans. My last winner, different SEC team than we've talked about in this category, but Arkansas, six straight wins.
Hog Suey.
The must bus finally starting to get going after a bit of a rocky start into SEC play. They've really dialed it up defensively now. Most recently, very big win over Missouri. They're actually playing right now as we're recording this. So hopefully by the time you're listening to this, they won't have just lost to Florida.
They were up at that.
They're currently winning with 12 minutes to go. So let's hope that that continues, which would be 7 in a row if you're scoring at home. But it's been a team that has struggled to start the season, kind of playing together, playing cohesively, and obviously more repetition. They've been able to figure that out over the last couple weeks or so. Obviously partial to my guy Justin Smith, the Indiana transfer. The must bus has been doing it with transfers. Connor Vanover is another former transfer who has been very productive. 7'3", can step out and hit the three as well. And then Moses Moody in the freshman class has been dynamic as well. So, I mean, it's not, as we've talked about, it's not the strongest year for the SEC, but credit to Arkansas for, I mean, more or less taking advantage of that. They're going to have some other big opportunities. They're like, Florida would be a big win today. Florida has had a strong year, and then they're going to have an opportunity in a couple weeks, or a little over a week, to play Alabama, who has been the one standard bearer in the conference. So they've already beaten Missouri, who is kind of the other team that was right there, the challenger, and now with a win tonight, they'll be alone in second place behind Alabama. So quite the glow up for the Hogs.
Yeah, I mean, they are on their way to another 20-win season, which is really impressive. And I texted you when we were watching the game the other day that I love the always run offense. And like,
yeah,
Arkansas just lets it fly. And they are up and down the floor. They're in your face defensively. They get in the passing lanes. I mean, they're just a fun team to cheer for and a fun team to watch. So certainly take after their coach with all the energy on the floor. And, you know, we are must bust guys. We have been for a little while now, and it's good to see some success there so early in Arkansas, because you could argue they took a shot with him. I mean, he had what, two flash in the pan seasons basically at Nevada, or one that built onto the other, with the Martin brothers and Jordan Caroline, AKA what, all transfers, where he hit home runs in the transfer market. And now he's getting to do it his own way at an SEC school.
Yeah, he made some noise, enough noise at Nevada, and kind of reinventing the game a little bit. Not the first to be transfer heavy, but certainly one of the better to do it.
Shout out the Cincinnati NCAA tournament game. That was a blast.
Yeah, that was
Mick Cronin, baby.
He's the pride of Westwood.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, I think also this will probably end up being a better situation for him. Not only just being in a power conference, the SEC, that's typically a good thing, but also he did this to himself a little bit, but he was also a little hamstrung by his roster at Nevada, where
yes,
a little bit of limited talents and kind of having to go with such a tight rotation really did not help matters in, you know, the long run. And kind of once you actually get to the NCAA tournament, playing better teams than they were in the Mountain West. So there is a little more depth on Arkansas's roster, the ability to play a deeper rotation, get guys in and out, and truly be able to play that style of basketball that they want to play. And if you're a player, there is nothing more fun than just your offense is to run,
like, right?
Get the ball, try to score as quickly as possible. And I mean, you can see that in the players, how much they love playing for him. And that's why they've taken off over the last couple of weeks. So things are happening. It was a little bit of a uncertainty how things would go without Isaiah Joe, who has been such a prolific shooter and scorer for Arkansas over the last few seasons, but they're doing pretty damn well.
They are. It's what we like. What we like to see here on the program.
That is all I have for winners. Do you have anybody else before some losers?
I have two shout-outs. Bellarmine, newly D1, have won 10 straight. They are atop the Atlantic Sun, ahead of Liberty, who is, as we know, a pretty solid team under Richie McKay. And the other one, do you know who is in second place in the American Conference?
I don't know. They all suck. I want to say Penny, or I want to say... That was my second guess then.
It is a surprise, the Greg Marshall-less Wichita State Shockers.
Penny is right there though.
Penny is right there. Credit to him for only being third in a bad conference, but that's beyond the point. Greg Marshall gone. They lose a vast majority of their roster from last year. They really have to just put the pieces together with an interim head coach. And they have done a superb job to be in not only second place, but have a pretty solid winning record and take it to a majority of the teams in this conference. Credit is due everywhere. They're not going to be a tournament team. It's whatever. But they are, like, the fact that Wichita State even has a winning record in league play and overall is truly a testament to the resilience of the team and this coaching staff. So credit to them.
Yeah, I mean, it is a good accomplishment, but kind of what you're saying with Memphis, probably going to be a one-bid league.
Yeah.
Which is quite a fall from grace for how the American was a couple of seasons ago. But, I mean, again, as we've talked about before, considering the circumstances, like, this is a lot better than anyone expected Wichita State to be.
It is.
Bellarmine, getting back to them really quickly. Can we talk about how stupid it is that they can't play in the NCAA tournament?
Merrimack all over again.
Right. The Chris Collins
team.
It's the NCAA. So my next statement is a given. But the logic just does not track.
No.
I can understand maybe the reverse, if you are for whatever reason going down a division and you kind of want to avoid teams having a some sort of competitive advantage or what have you, talent disparity, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
I don't fully support it, but I could see something being done in that regard. But when you're coming up from Division II to Division I, like, that's not like a cheat code. That's not something that...
Right.
You should be preventing teams from competing for championships right away. I mean, especially if they, as
they were presumably at a disadvantage already.
Yeah.
So it's a really dumb rule. We will now probably see two teams that should have made it in back-to-back years that won't because of it. But so is life with the NCAA.
The silver lining of sorts is if they win the A-Sun, that will count. And as we know, Atlantic Sun flags fly forever. So
they do.
Something to shoot for at least. But yeah, they've long been a power in Kentucky. Would play exhibitions against IU every couple of years. So usually got to see them, and the boys can hoop. Boys can hoop, and I think that's going to be a team that will be a pretty solid, 13 seed once they are finally eligible to play in the NCAA tournament, which can't come soon enough.
Mm-hmm. That's all I had, though, for winners.
Big loser of the week, Jim Christian. Jalen Johnson opted out willingly of the program. Jim Christian did not, with very, very little time left to play out the rest of the season, because Boston College was not going to be a postseason team at all. What can you say? Just not a very good tenure. You would have liked to at least see them let him finish the season, but this team has really not been competitive in the ACC for quite some time. I mean, since Al Skinner. And I think the highlight of the Jim Christian era was probably, or low light, whatever you want to call it, was going winless in ACC play.
Yes, I would probably say that is correct. But yeah, I mean, I am looking for the numbers right now. He was incredibly bad at Boston College. And like, here's the thing. They're an ACC team by name. They should not be in the ACC. And I think it's been pretty obvious for a while that they just are not at that level and should not be at that level. But here they are. It's a hell of a rebuild job. It's going to be incredibly difficult. And things have only gotten worse since he took over. So, what do you do if you're Boston College? I know that there's been a ton of names that have been floated around. None of them do I think are really that realistic. But they're probably going to have to go mid-major route, if anything, to find a coach. And that's got to be a home run hire and someone who can build.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of disarray. One postseason appearance in seven seasons. That postseason appearance being in the NIT in a year, you finished 12th in the ACC. So even that is hard to get too jazzed about. But
he was 78-132 overall, 26-94 in ACC play.
That's not great.
Nearly 70 games under 500.
Did beat Duke that one time. That was fun.
He did.
But yeah, it's just BC is in a tough position. The thing that the people have floated, and I think is, if you really want to just swing for the fences and go for it, Mr. East Coast, Mr. Northeast, Rick Pitino, shoot.
I've seen that. I know a lot of, a surprising amount of BC fans want that, which I just don't understand.
It won't happen, but no. If they won't, like, they won't even pursue him at all, but if,
and they shouldn't.
I mean, sometimes you
how
have
many
to
years does he have
wind.
Left in coaching, do you think?
I mean, that's best case scenario, though, if they get somebody like Rick Pitino, because if you truly nail it, if you truly get a young up-and-comer who, in a perfect world, would be at Boston College for, you know, 30, 35 years, be like John Chaney was at Temple.
Yeah.
They'll leave. They'll go somewhere else after, like, year five.
Yeah.
You could potentially be right back where he started. I'm just saying, you know,
it's,
I guess, the highest ceiling, lowest, or highest floor, highest ceiling would be Rick Pitino out of who I think they could reasonably get. There are a host of good mid-major coaches. I don't really, and even Rick Pitino probably couldn't do this either, but there's really nobody out there that could just walk in and be successful. It's going to be a big time grind rebuilding Boston College, and I mean, playing in the ACC, it has to be one of the worst Power Six jobs
easily. So a name that got floated around that I think would be better than Rick Pitino is John Beilein. That's the kind of guy you're looking for, someone that's not going to try and, this is probably his last job, you know, this is the last one he's going to take. If he's going anywhere, it's to retire. And then, you know, you can groom a coach in waiting, or he can build the program up to something respectable where then you can land somebody else to take the reins for the next however many years. But
yeah, just hand it off to his son.
Yeah, exactly. Because that works well, or that would work well. But the name, realistically, if I had to take a shot in the dark right now as someone that they are going to get, I think it's going to be John Becker from Vermont. I think geographic ties make a ton of sense. I think what he did at Vermont is commendable and has been really one of the more under the radar program turnarounds, builds, whatever you want to call it, to a true America East power, where they were a shoe-in for the NCAA tournament past couple of years and have continued to see some big success there. I think that makes a ton of sense for them, but I don't think it's, you know, the sexier, the splashy hire that BC fans would want, especially given the fact that he's 52.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair, and that's a very
But then level, again, look at Mike Young.
Yeah.
It's kind of it feels similar to Mike Young at Virginia Tech, where I certainly thought it was a poor hire, or at least not one that Virginia Tech should have made, or, you know, they could have done better, whatever it may be. Older guy that spent a lot of time in a mid-major, and all of a sudden he gets the chance at a Power 6 school, and some would say he's taking advantage, Mr. November.
Somewhat, yeah. Finding out there are other months on the calendar this year, but
yeah
I don't know. I think I would probably feel a little better about John Becker. I think the hesitation with Mike Young is it seemed like coming off a very good season, he didn't necessarily have as lengthy a run of sustained success, but. Becker absolutely does. And I mean, UMBC gets all the headlines for beating Virginia as the first 16-1 out of the America East, but they're only in that position because they hit a buzzer beater in the final to beat Vermont. Vermont has just run that conference for years and years now.
Still tied for first in the America East right now.
Yeah. So, I mean, it makes logical sense. I think it's, The question is he going to be up for the ACC? And it's a grind. It's hard to tell. It was hard to tell with Mike Young. He's been surprisingly good so far, walking into what was, I mean, not as bad a situation, but not much better at Virginia Tech. So we can't exactly leave BC for dead, but I think it would be interesting to see if they take a swing at a bigger name like a Beeline because I do think Beeline is going to take one last college job. I don't know
that he wants where one like be. A rebuild like this though.
Yeah, that's the tough part, but I mean, potentially you get Beeline in for a couple years and then kind of like Larry Brown did with Yankovic at SMU. You bring back an old friend as your coach in waiting. We could see that this is just fan fiction at this point, but
of course,
could see,
indulge us if you will.
You bring back Beeline, has a couple of years kind of taking his lumps, building a solid program. Then you bring back Luke Yaklich from UIC associate head coach, coach in waiting. You know, it's exactly what Yankovic did, going from head coach to an assistant coaching job. Maybe the allure of being an ACC head coach after retirement could lure him. I don't know. We still have to see whether Yaklich is actually going to be a successful head coach. He's still midway through year one at UIC, so that could be putting the cart ahead of the horse here, but I would love to see BC send out some feelers to some bigger names before going with kind of a regional hire like John Becker, as solid as that would be.
Yeah, they've got to take some swings. I mean, they have to.
I mean, ACC basketball, go big or go home. You can't just play the middle and expect to have any kind of success.
Yeah, I mean, this year should be the sign of that. This year should be the calling card for why you absolutely should do that, because you don't know when a down year is coming for the entire league. And if BC was halfway decent, they could be a top four team in the ACC right now.
Right. Could have, but unfortunately the rest of the league having a down year is still better than a BC normal year.
Correct.
Jim Christian. This could be a take, but to me, he looks like an off-brand Mark Turgeon.
Ooh, that That is something I did not expect.
I was going through Wikipedia because he doesn't get a lot of FaceTime on anywhere.
So yeah.
had to mention that. I thought that was a revelation, but now he'll slink back into the shadow somewhere. Gone but never forgotten. All right. My big loser of the week, I really only had one, which is unlike me, I know, but it's Missouri. Every time you think you have a read on the Tigers,
they say no, they, not so fast.
Hey, no, yeah. Do not ever get comfortable having some sort of take on this team because they will rip it away from you. Last week they were a winner because they beat Alabama. They were alone in second place in the SEC, as we mentioned. Now Arkansas is alone in second place. And not only did Arkansas just beat Missouri, Ole Miss just ran Missouri out of the gym. And as we're recording this, Georgia could be less than 4 minutes away from extending Missouri's misery. CTC.
Our guy.
Yeah.
It's been tough. A tough week, possibly longer now if this result holds. But I think the thing is, I think Missouri is pretty well safe in the NCAA tournament for now. A loss to Georgia is not great. It will not look good. But they would have to do something drastic to fall out. And at this point, it's seeding. They certainly aren't a team I would like to see. If I was a one seed, I would not like to see them in the second round and eight or nine seed. If you're Missouri, though, move up a line to the six, and all of a sudden you've got a much easier path to a Sweet 16. But you know, this feels like one of those teams that we look at in March, see they make a run, or see they are just disappointing and flame out. Let's try that again. Flame out early and are like, what the hell happened? And it's just they peaked too soon. And now it's as simple as that.
Should mention, in fairness, Jeremiah Tillman is not playing tonight against Georgia, but still, they have struggled even before tonight. But yeah, I think it's just, it's one of those things. I think being able to handle success or just not at all. We have honestly flip-flopped back and forth every week.
So is Missouri, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not
whether
reason.
They want to be a good team or not. They just continue to play the opposite way.
Like, Mizzou Twitter is a small but vocal corner of the internet, and the prevailing notion seems to be, and we have noticed this as well, every time they start to really put it together, play well, have a huge jump in the polls, they immediately will lay an egg, as if kind of just understanding this is as high as we'll climb. Let's now begin the trudge backwards to, you know,
safety.
21st or out of the rankings entirely at this rate. But yeah, I mean, they've got a solid resume of quality wins. They beat Illinois. They have a win over Arkansas, Tennessee, Alabama, and depending on how you feel about Oregon, like, there are good wins you can point to, but in SEC play and how the SEC is this year, there are also a number of concerning or even head-scratching losses. So just a very, very tough team to read. And I think they've got one of the biggest gaps out of almost anybody in college basketball between ceiling and floor.
Most definitely. I mean, they are a team that can beat anyone in the SEC and can absolutely lose to anyone in the SEC. And I say that fully knowing Vanderbilt is an SEC program. Like, they could lose to the Commodores.
They could. It is not outside of the realm of possibility. Vanderbilt is Scottie Pippen is he's pretty good.
Yes.
That's what I have to say about Vanderbilt this season.
That's it. And Jerry Stackhouse does not like the fans.
Jerry Stackhouse wants to personally fight everyone who has some kind of rooting interest or is a member of the media. But yeah, I mean, to Vanderbilt's credit, they've got a couple wins. Their last game, they just beat the shit out of Mississippi State. So apologies to Ben Howland. That's a tough one. But
I mean, that Mississippi State team, though, to the point about Missouri, beat Missouri.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like, this is just big-time tangent on SEC basketball, but, like, Ben Howland is low-key doing one of the better coaching jobs in the league this year just because he has almost nothing to work with. The cupboard was completely bare from last much. Season. Yeah, so that's my takeaway. Big Ben Howland guy, clearly.
And obviously we love Coach Tom Crean.
Yeah, oh yeah. Let's hope he can hold on before we finish recording so I can celebrate properly. But that Missouri is my big loser of the week. Who do you got?
I have a couple others. I am going to throw a pair of Big Ten teams under the bus. I will go with Minnesota. This is Rutgers Light from last year. They have zero wins on the road. You cannot be an NCAA tournament team with zero wins on the road, and I don't care who you've beaten at home. You cannot allow a team that has not won a single game outside of their home arena to be in the NCAA tournament.
You can be an NCAA tournament team. Nope. You will not be a good one because you will not win a single game.
They have lost. They were swept by Maryland.
Hey, Maryland's sneaky good.
Are they, though?
No, I mean, Maryland still has a not bad chance to make the NCAA tournament and one game above 500. Yes. We'd love to see that.
I mean, Penn State is still getting talks, and they are 4-9 and 7-10. And Penn State, this is the perfect segue because Penn State is my other team. All you had to do was not lose to Nebraska. And you lost to Nebraska. If you lose to Michigan State on the road, so what? Michigan State isn't having a great year, but it's understandable. Nebraska is inexcusable. And that has simply torpedoed their chances. Now they're going to go out and beat Ohio State this week. So then you never know what to think. But that's all they had to do, and they still couldn't do it. Very strange team. I mean, again, I talked about it last week, 2 weeks ago. I can't remember which one. But in my net rankings tangent, Penn State is still in the top 40 in the net. They're 7-10. They're 1-7 on the road. They're 3-7 in quad one games. They have a quad three loss. How does this make sense?
I mean, Penn State and Maryland are both top 40 KenPom teams, both above Minnesota, which you love to see. Speaking of the Big Ten, just many rants once again. Let me take you back a couple off seasons ago. In one off season, three notable Big Ten programs made coaching changes: Ohio State, Illinois, and Indiana. Two of those teams are currently in the top five nationally. I'll let you guess which one the third is. Perennially a bubble team. But it's just...
Did one of us happen to go there?
Yes. It's something I'm reminded of, especially every time that Indiana plays Ohio State, as they did on Saturday. And, I mean, I knew it was going to happen. It happened anyway. I think Archie's now 1-6 against Chris Holtman. And you think about how fortunes could have been changed because, I mean, a lot of people at Ohio State wanted Archie right there from Dayton.
Yeah.
Chris Holtman at Butler, you know, if you wanted to save money on gas, you could have just sent those guys to the geographically closer schools. But of course that didn't happen because life is pain. But
yes.
Yeah, it's incredible what a good coaching hire can do for a school. And yet every day I open up twitter.com and I see people choosing violence by saying people need to give Archie more time. It's like, look at these other schools that have had the same amount of time with their head coaches, actually made progress and are nationally relevant. Couldn't be me. Yeah, so we're doing great and feeling excellent this week again.
That is disheartening. This is what I'll say. It is very disheartening. There was a whole point I had that I wanted to make during this little soliloquy, if you will, and I have completely forgotten it now. But
happy to help.
Yeah, shit. And it was along the lines of Archie, but I don't know if I'm ever going to remember it now. That's disappointing.
Well, yeah, the good news is CTC is up on another ranked team, Missouri, by double digits with a minute left. So things are looking good.
The man, the myth, the legend.
Bring him
out. Imagine getting rid of him.
After winning two outright Big Ten titles in 4 years.
Couldn't be me.
I cannot. I tell you what, it's... Yeah. Two when I went to school there, and then nothing since. I don't know if there's a correlation there, but... We should have friend of the program, Nick Seisloff, back on to discuss.
We should. We're both bubble teams. I think we should talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah. How do you feel? Are you one of those people that is insistent that the bubble gets weaker every year?
No.
Okay, good. I hate those people.
I think it stays the exact same, and it's just
it does.
Everyone looks at it differently every single year, or they think they come in with such expectations, and then the bubble always sits at the exact same spot.
Yeah, bubble teams just aren't great. Like, that's you shouldn't be expecting anything more from them. Like, if they were bona fide tournament teams, they would be comfortably in the tournament.
Exactly.
They have to scrape and claw to get in, and that's how you end up with first four matchups of, like, St. John's versus Arizona State.
What a doozy that was, though.
Hypothetically.
Yeah. Yes. Shout out Lou Dort, by the way. Having a heck of a run in the NBA.
Yeah, 15 out of 10 name. Wish he could have gotten more run in college, staying for 4 years or something fun like that.
Yes, so according to bracketmatrix.com, one of my favorite www dots on the entire internet, we've got Seton Hall as a consensus 10 seed, Indiana as an 11, trending 12. Some have them as high as 8. They've got a fairly favorable schedule down the stretch, though. Where do you see them going?
I just mentioning very quickly, I saw one of the brackets you posted earlier today with a just hearkening back to the committee doesn't do storylines, but it had a first round matchup of 7 Rutger versus 10 Seton Hall.
I've seen it everywhere too.
I'm sure completely random.
I've seen it everywhere, and I am both. I mean, that game would be my Armageddon. That's it. Either we win and I am triumphant and jubilant and hammered in joy, or I am in trouble on the streets of Chicago. Because my
drink
team is
to celebrate
lost.
Or drink to forget.
Yeah. Yep.
Those are the two vibes. But looking at Indiana's schedule the rest of the way, in a word, concern. Ooh. In another word, panic.
Oh.
So as it sits, Indiana is 2 games above 500, which is a better position to be in than Maryland, but not by much.
1 game, to be exact.
Here is the one game I have confidence about, Michigan State. The rest of them, on the road to Rutgers. I mean, can't win at the rack. At home
Cameron
against
Indoor North.
At home against Michigan. The last time that Indiana played a good ranked Michigan team at home, I believe the game started off something like 20-0. Mm-hmm. So that'll happen again. And then on the road at Purdue to finish the season.
That's a nightmare.
That's a loss.
That's a game that you guys are going to need so badly.
And just will not even show up. We'll score like 55 points. Yeah.
But it'll be like 94-55.
The nail in the coffin is going to be the game tonight as you are listening to this at home or in your car or wherever. At home against Minnesota, who, as we've mentioned, has not won away from the barn all year. This will be that game. Like Indiana could not quite finish the task. Indiana could not quite finish the task and be the first team to lose to Nebraska this year. So this is where they will plant their flag. Like, everything is saying this should be a comfortable win. Minnesota has not won outside of their home arena all season. That will change, and I will just scream into the void.
So you think 1-4 is the finish for Indiana?
I mean, in Indiana's defense, I did not think they would beat Iowa either time. So, like,
true.
Maybe, but like,
one of those though was a Durkin's Thursday, which is where Indiana shows up at their best.
It's true. Well, it was a third, but Durkin's Thursdays are normally reserved for home games. That's true.
That's true.
The head scratching part.
Yeah. It's like the TNT Bowls.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not thrilled that the last three Saturday games of the year they're playing at 11 a.m. to force me to wake up early, but you know, that's a sacrifice I'm willing to make. Get it out of the way early.
Thank you for your service.
It's not all heroes wear capes. But yeah, that's what we have to look forward to. So I don't know. I feel like they'll somehow like win two games in the Big Ten tournament and somehow get into the field as like an 11 seed and lose by, I don't know, maybe like 30 to Clemson or some other team I've made fun of this year.
Clemson would be a nightmare.
Yeah. I mean, like, at some point, one of Archie's teams will happen to play Virginia. Maybe after his next extension, they'll draw them in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. And that will be...
That's a dream for you.
The least fun game I could possibly watch. Bar none.
But I remember what I was going to say.
Oh, goody.
But I need to look it up, so I'm going to fill the airtime by saying...
How confident are you feeling about Seton Hall the rest of the
week? That was the point I was going to get to. I feel very good, mainly because...
I would too, yeah.
Look at DePaul, this. Georgetown, Butler, Connecticut, and St. John's both are now challenging games. I think James Booknight is officially back tonight, so... UConn is like a somewhat competent team with him, although Seton Hall won pretty comfortably in stores. Just don't trip up against DePaul. It happened.
CTC, they put a second back on the clock, but yeah, Georgia's going to win, folks.
Georgia wins, folks.
You heard it. Well, you didn't hear it here first because it's the morning after, but
breaking news.
Yeah.
Avoid the bad loss to DePaul. Beat up on Georgetown like we have. Get through Butler. I think it would be back-to-back wins for the first time ever at Hinkle. Not that that's saying much because we really haven't played Butler very often. And then really you can split down the stretch with UConn and St. John's. Ideally, you win them both. I mean, 5-0, and they're probably in the 8-9 game, so I would like to see a dropped game somewhere along the lines just because this team is not going anywhere if they're in the 8-9 game. But I feel pretty good. As I say that, something bad is going to happen, like a loss to DePaul tonight as you're listening. But it could be a very bad night for both of us, actually, now that I look at it. The good news, though, Seton Hall completed the season sweep this past week over Marquette, winning the ugliest basketball game I have seen in a long time. Marquette has not beaten Seton Hall in 766 days. That is your stat of the day.
Who's counting?
Six straight for the Pirates. It's fun to win. It's fun to win in a rivalry game. It's fun every single time stuff like this happens. So may it long continue.
Happy for you. That's big. That's big. Okay. Do you want to get your shot in at Archie or whatever you were going to say?
No, I have no shots at Archie.
Okay.
I thought
you had something to say.
I did, and then I decided, you know what, we're gonna hold it for next week because if you guys lose to Minnesota, then it'll just make next week's episode all the sweeter.
So I'm clearly already going through it. Okay. that's fine. Before we close, season 6, Heat Check Sim is about to tip off, and not to jinx it, but there is a greater than 0% chance that both our teams could make the tournament this year. for once I'm in the preseason top 25 at 24, picked to finish third in the SEC, which would be something. Kentucky sucks now, so it's going to be fun when I lose to them. But how are you feeling about Seton Hall and
life imitates art,
basketball world?
Not great. Losing my best player really screwed us up. We were headed for a top 20 team. Now we are on the outside of the top 40. Big East is interesting, though. There are no truly dominant teams. Providence is starting to make a little rise. But if we can steal a couple, we're going to be in a great spot. I think third place is still on the table, as it is every year.
Always.
For us. But a third place finish would get us into the NCAA tournament for sure. I need to end the losing streak against Rutgers, though. I think that is the most pressing thing I've got going. I've got a very hard non-conference schedule. Monmouth, again, is in the top 15 or top 20. Would love to steal another one against them, but and then our rivalry is even. So this is a big year.
It is a big year. I should be favored in all of my, I think, scheduled non-conference games, but I'm just always a heavy underdog against Georgia Tech, but that's fine. Something to look forward to. Sorry, I'm just distracted by Dad on TV right now, just interviewing. First thing he did after the game, run over to the sparsely populated student section at Gloria Stegman Coliseum to thank the kids for supporting the Bulldogs. That's the coach I aspire to be in fake basketball world. So hopefully we'll bring home some hardware this year. We'll see.
They deserve it. That fake student section really deserves it. Yours, not the one obviously that showed up to the game, deserves it too.
Yeah. There were at least like 15 or 20 kids there, looks like. Fun show as always. We will be back next week. We are in the stretch run now of the college basketball season, only about a month to go. Less than that, really, until Selection Sunday, which is exciting because it's starting to feel real. It's starting to feel real. We will have March Madness this year in the great state of Indiana, and nothing can happen that would take that away from us. So I'm excited for that. We will be back next week for hopefully a more uplifting discussion of our respective college basketball programs, but no promises. You will have to tune in next week to find out, but we will see you then.